Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say once again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on the broadcast. Today is Monday, June 5th, 2023. The show is packed this morning. I've got a lot to focus in on the upcoming, actually the ongoing trial of Iranian journalist Niloufar Hamedi. Going to be talking about that and the whole subject of women, featuring a story from my book, Uprising, We Are the Revolution. I'm going to bring back the subject of women, not only from Iran, but right here in the good old USA and the transgender movement and how it's affecting women and women's sports in particular. Got a lot to talk about today on a Monday, but I want to start out with a very serious situation going on for a young Christian girl who has been persecuted and kidnapped in Egypt. I found this on the Global Christian Relief site. Now, that's the new name for Open Doors since its founder, Brother Andrew, died. I think it's been about a year ago. But this story caught my attention right away. It's on my Praying for the Persecuted Church page. Her name is Marina. She's from Qenna, Egypt. She has been kidnapped, forced to convert to Islam. And the sad thing in this situation is no one seems willing to help her husband find her. I want to read you the story and talk about this a little bit. Marina worked at a salon, and she was ready to leave after she discovered the owner, Hassan, of the salon, had ties to Islamic terrorist group. Well, once she found that out, it's goodbye. A woman named Bahar, who according to this article was masquerading as a friend, lured Marina with the promise of a job at a different salon. Marina, of course, was excited for the new opportunity, but here's the thing. She had no idea who Bahar was. In fact, this woman was teaming up with Hassan. She didn't know that. Marina's husband, Helim, sat down recently with Global Christian Relief, and he shared what happened next. He said at around 12:45 p.m., Marina called and said that Bahar was waiting for her at the metro. I asked Marina to meet her and bring her to our home as a guest. So the husband wants to meet this woman. So Marina goes out to meet Bahar, and then here's where the trauma began. Her phone was switched off. She didn't return home. And Halam says, I tried to call her many times, but of course it went to voicemail. It was switched off. I searched for her everywhere. Couldn't find her. That very evening, I filed a police report on my wife's disappearance. But the report that he filed wasn't put into action until 3 days later. The police have done nothing to help me. And he says, I haven't seen or heard from Marina since. However, the very day of his wife's disappearance, a document was submitted for a new ID claiming in this document that Marina now identified as Muslim. Now, this is a Christian girl, and this document, son, comes to light, says that she's now a Muslim. Halim, he is certain his wife was kidnapped and forced into conversion. This happens a lot in the Middle East, kidnapping young Christian girls, forcing them to convert to Islam, and then they are part of a forced marriage. So for months, according to this article, he searched for her and tried to find justice. But he hit one brick wall after another in his search. I asked the church to help me. The church said, well, this is a difficult issue. We are praying, but we can't do anything because, now listen, this is what the church said. Many powerful people are involved. Really? They told me Hassan is supported by important people. It's awful. What we need to do as Christians, thousands of miles away, we have the distinct privilege to have the power of intercessory spiritual warfare prayer, that we break down the strongholds of Satan that has kept this young, precious Christian girl kidnapped for this long. This is a daughter of the King. And he promises he will never leave or forsake us. But we as Christians have the passion to enter in and pray and break down strongholds and speak out against the forces of darkness that are holding Marina. We need to be prayed that she will be comforted by angels and filled with peace and God's love wherever she is. And also pray for her husband, Halam. He's not going to give up. He's not going to grow weary in searching for his wife, but he needs our strength and prayers. And also, let's pray for those who've taken Marina. We command that the satanic forces release her back to her family so she can once again live a life of freedom and faith. Unfortunately, this happens pretty often in the Middle East. And remember Marina, her story is on my Praying for the Persecuted church page. Don't forget her, and I will keep us up to date with what is happening next. I want to take us into Iran now from Egypt, and I want to talk a little bit about a very brave journalist. And I wanted to introduce you to her if you've never met her before. Her name is Niloufar Hamady, and her companion, Eli Mohammadi, they've been held on alleged allegations of espionage. What was their crime? Well, it was Niloufar Hamady back in September of last year that broke the story, as a journalist working in Iran, broke the story about Mahsa Amini being beaten to death while in custody. She reported on the death of Mahsa Amini, which began the Woman, Life, and Freedom movement. Now, you know the story. Amini was arrested and ultimately killed by the so-called morality police for improperly wearing a headscarf, for showing too much hair. Now, her death, of course, last September sparked an uprising in the streets of Iran and demonstrations around the world in support of what happened to Mahsa. Now, this woman, journalist, is not allowed to report the truth because obviously breaking the story surged the Women, Life, and Freedom movement. Now they have added to her reporting allegations of spying for the CIA, the Saudis, Israel's Mossad for Great Britain, and they, that is her partner and her as well, or co-worker, I should say, sorry, could be sentenced to death. This is very important that we are a voice for this woman. Now, she wrote for the reformist daily newspaper Daily, that is Niloufar. And obviously, as a reporter, she reports the facts. She broke the news that Mahsa was on life support in a Tehran hospital after being beaten. And one of the pictures in her report was an image showing Amina's parents hugging in a hospital corridor, and that drew worldwide attention and condemnation. Now, also, this other girl works with the Daily Newspaper, and also she was arrested in conjunction with Niloufar. And before she was arrested, that is, Niloufar, she spoke on a video produced by her paper about the challenges female journalists face in Iran. And in this video, she admitted that sometimes she did think about walking away from it all. Could you blame her? But you know what she said? What kind of job is this? A job which has no money, no security, and doesn't particularly benefit you. And yet, we take a stand. We will keep on. Can you just think for a minute? We have a lot of fake media here in the U.S. And, you know, in the whole Donald Trump, President Trump scenario, the false accusations and charges about colluding with Russia in the election. We have so many dishonest journalists here. Here is a profoundly, deeply committed journalist who said, I have no real money, no security, but I am going to take a stand in the most dangerous country in the world to speak the truth. You have got to say that this is a woman of great convictions and great integrity. Now, her trial has begun, or I should say their trial has begun, and this is a trial that they could face the death penalty. And that's why I'm bringing this story to you today. So we have got to stand for her. She has denied all of these accusations and emphasized that she performed her duties as a journalist within the framework of the law and did not take any action, of course, against Iran's security, adding that even her lawyers have not had a chance to defend her. Another journalist, Ilah Mohammadi, faces the same accusations for covering Amini's funeral in Sakwaz. Now, that was subsequent to, of course, her death. And the lawyers are listing unlawful treatment of her during her arrest and the hearing process, keeping her in solitary confinement for long periods of time, and assigning the court's revolutionary court for the hearing. And this is so sad that this journalist is being treated in such a way. So we need to pray for them, these journalists that are taking such pains to stand for the truth. Now, if you remember a few years ago, a journalist here that worked for the Washington Post, Jason Rezaian, was a prisoner in Iran as a journalist. And I wanted to share just briefly a brief interview with his wife, the situation in Iran for journalists. And she was arrested in Iran along with her husband, Jason, and in prison for several months. And recently she was asked how a journalist is treated there. Unfortunately, she says, journalists, once they are arrested on anti-state or security charges, they immediately become political prisoners. That means they are not treated any better than any other political prisoner, especially notorious prisons like Evin, where, of course, Niloufar is at. They are kept in very small cells, especially in solitary confinement. In some cases, no bathroom. Our immediate access to water, no window. Wow. The fluorescent lights are on 24/7. Every condition is terrible, but also the mental pressure is very high because what the security forces do is to make sure they keep pressuring you. And that's their tactic, to get you to confess to everything you haven't done. And basically make false confessions that can later be used against you as so-called evidence. Now, Jason's wife goes on to say that all media in Iran is state-run media. So So the government has complete control over everything that gets produced as media content, whether for the TV, state TV, or state newspapers, or radios. And they get assigned by their editors to do these stories. And that's why the charges that they label these journalists with don't make any sense. It's an absolute farce. Because once these journalists were assigned to go and cover a story, they never thought that they're going to be charged with, let's say, espionage or spreading propaganda against the system. This is horrible, the way that they are treated. But I want to mention that these Iranian journalists, Niloufar and Elahi, have won an international prize amidst the shrinking press freedom in that country. And they have, by the UN, have been awarded as the top jailer of journalists for 2022. As you know, this is what Iran is. It's one big prison for journalists. But they have won the UNESCO Prize. They are recognized as top journalists in the world, as foreign journalists who risk their lives every day. And so I thank Yangay Razian, she's a senior researcher at the Committee to Protect Journalists, and her husband, of course, they were both in prison in Iran several years ago. They know exactly, precisely of what Niloufar is going through even now as we speak. So please keep not only Marina, the Christian in Egypt, in your prayers, but as well keep Niloufar in your prayers as she goes through this painful, very frightening, very serious trial where she and her coworker could be put to death simply for doing their job in Iran. And that is serious. Niloufar Hamadeh. Niloufar Hamadeh. Remember her in your prayers. About 2.5 months ago, I published my book, Uprising, We Are the Revolution, which, if it wasn't for Niloufar Hamadeh, we wouldn't know all that happened that fateful day when Mahsa Amini was beaten and killed and sparked the Woman, Life, and Freedom Revolution. We talk about freedoms so much here in America, but there are no such things as freedoms in Iran. And I want to read to you, since we're on the subject of women, and Iran being one big prison for women journalists, it's also one big prison for women in general. I can distinctly remember a few years ago during the racial unrest in America that a select number of players of the NFL refused to stand during the singing of the national anthem, and instead they kneeled. I'm sure you remember that too. They were convinced that the cancer of racism in America had deeply infected just every institution and that African Americans had been wrongly targeted by police officers. So in order to make their convictions known and have their voices heard, they decided to take a knee during one of the most sacred moments in a sporting events. Now, their act of protest, well, that deeply offended many Americans, including myself, who felt that the timing of their protest was an insult to the brave men and women of the military who put themselves in harm's way to defend our freedoms. And why I respected their right to protest and exercise their First Amendment rights, I thought that the occasion of that protest was very wrong. The American flag and the heroes who fought for it guarantees our freedom of speech, our freedom to assemble, and our freedom of religion. The national anthem is a solemn reminder that freedom is really not free, and many brave Americans have shed their blood to protect that all-important seven-letter word called freedom. Well, but in the heat of the moment when my blood pressure was soaring and my heart was filled with rage, I remembered this famous quote from the French philosopher Voltaire, who declared, "I may not agree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." Well, that famous quote from Voltaire puts everything into perspective, doesn't it? It's true. I really hate the things some people say and do, and it really offends me, but our Constitution guarantees them, you and I included, of course, the right to say it, and I have to go back to the words of Voltaire and afford them, the ones I disagree with, the right to say and do whatever on their minds, regardless, here's the point, regardless of how it offends me, they have the right. Keep that in mind and go with me back to Iran, thousands of miles away, in the tiny Iranian city of Ardabil. A lesser-known athlete was making her mark on the sport of swimming. 15-year-old Azra Panahi. She's recognized, and she was recognized, as the top swimmer in the East Abyssinian province of Iran. She had won the bronze, that's third place, in the 50 and 100-meter freestyle during the individual competition. That was at the age of 12. And now, here 3 years later, she has made a name for herself. However, it wasn't swimming that catapulted Azra to gain worldwide recognition this time. Instead, it was Azra's refusal to sing. She's protesting just like these athletes in America. I refuse to sing. What's the story? The students at Shahid Girls School in Ardabil had been bused to a special event, a pro-government rally, where they were forced to sing a song praising the supreme leader of Iran. The event took place on October 12th, and that was just 3 weeks after the unjust death of Gina Mahsa Amini. The young girls, well, they were in no mood to sing. They refused to raise their voices, and one of those voices was that of Azra Panahi. The avid swimmer joined the rest of her schoolmates and remained silent. Instead, they all chanted, "Death to the dictator." Now, once they returned to the school, the principal was outraged at their non-participation in singing the pro-government song. And what he did, he summoned security forces. When the security forces arrived, they immediately began beating the young schoolgirls, arresting 10 of them. 12 other girls were rushed to the hospital, suffering from trauma to their heads, one of them being Azra Panahi. 3 days later, Azra, the famed swimmer of Iran, succumbed to her head injuries and died. When I read about Azra's death, I literally wept. Azra was an athlete, just like the famous football players we talked about in the NFL. Remember, they kneeled, they refused to stand during the national anthem. She didn't have the name recognition that they had, but as a human being, she had the same right to say no. Azra had the right to refuse to sing, just like the football players. However, in Iran, her right was not respected. Her right was denied with a swift blow to the head by a police officer carrying out his duty under the orders of a dictatorship government. Azra was outraged at the treatment of women in Iran, and she refused to raise her voice to an oppressive leader. Her refusal was met with violence and death. Her rights were swiftly denied as a reminder to all other schoolgirls that obedience is not an option in the Islamic Republic of Iran. The cruel and unjust death of Azra Panahi is a painful reminder that we still here take our freedoms way too much for granted. It is truly sad to think that one day soon, Azra may have won the gold medal in swimming at the Olympics. She may have attained worldwide name recognition as some American athletes, but we will never know. We'll never know that for a fact. Her voice was silenced by a cruel government who refused her right not to sing. On October 12, 2022, a young Iranian swimmer really won my heart forever. She exceeded in winning a gold medal in swimming. She made her mark on humanity with an act of courage heard around the world. Azra refused to honor a dictator. She refused to sing for a murderer. She spoke up boldly for all Iranian women and the rest of the women of this world. We must never forget her supreme act of bravery. Azra defines exactly what the word freedom truly means. From my book, Uprising, We Are the Revolution. Now, you know about the treatment of women in Iran. You know about the oppression of women in Iran. Let's take that same subject across the oceans, across from the Middle East to here. There is, as my wife, Becky Noble, the journalist and writer for Red State and the weekly contributor on the Patriot Radio with Jamie Allman, in the words of my wife, the problem with women, not just in Iran, but here, is something called the erasure of women, or the erasing of women. Want to know why we have a problem here of women being oppressed? Well, you know all about what's happening in the transgender movement. These men who think they are women biologically and chromosomally, which they are not, are participating in women's sports. And guess what? They've been given the green light to do this. How unfair is that for a transgender, quote-unquote, man thinking he's a woman to compete against other women in sports? Biologically, it's not only wrong, but physiologically, they have an advantage. And recently, a well-known figure on this subject, Matt Walsh, who wrote the book What is a Woman, and it's a great documentary too, had an opportunity to talk with a woman athlete about this unfair advantage competing against transgenders. Let's listen.
The first race that I competed against a transgender athlete was during my freshman year. And once the gun went off, the two transgender athletes took off flying and left all of us girls in the dust. Throughout all 4 years of high school, I was forced to compete against biological males. I only competed against them in the sprinting events, but I raced against these athletes over a dozen times throughout the years, and every single time I lost.
Did they inch you out of medals that you would have won otherwise, or trophies you would have
won? They beat me out by 20 meters out of medals. And qualifying spots, I missed out on qualifying for New England's. I had to go in the long jump and the 4x200-meter relay, so I was forced on the sidelines in my own event, and if they were not there, I would have been able to qualify. So I missed out on so much throughout my high school career.
Did they win all the events or almost all the events?
Between the two of them, they won every single event they competed in.
How does that feel?
It is so frustrating and heartbreaking because we elite female athletes train so hard to shave just fractions of a second off of our time, and going into races knowing that we will never be able to win.
Feels like all that work gone to waste?
It does. After so many losses, it just gets to the point of, why am I even doing this? Why am I keep training so hard and sacrificing so much just to place third and beyond?
This is a reality for women athletes. Matt Walsh interviewing a woman athlete about the unfairness of the transgenders in the sports that she participates in. Now, I want you to hear, this is hilarious, but it's so sad. This is only 41 seconds. Matt Walsh asks the all-important question of a transgender, what is a woman?
You don't want to answer any of the questions. Maybe we'll end with this because we're talking about womanhood. So people could probably shout out the question I'm going to ask you right now.
Okay.
But you know that you're a woman.
Yes.
What is that?
So gender is a social thing. It only makes sense.
I don't want to hear that. What is a woman? What is a woman?
What is a woman?
The word woman, define in the dictionary. Go.
A woman is somebody who is included and respected and seen and participates in society, recognized by other women. If you speak with women...
Circular definition.
That's my... whatever.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Obviously, this transgender has no idea what a woman is, and that is all about the article that my wife, Becky Noble, a couple of months ago wrote as a featured article in Gumshoe Politics, and it's called The Erasing of Women in America. And here's what Becky wrote. I used to wonder what my mom thought in late 1964 as she awaited my arrival into the world in early 1965. That America was a vastly different place than it is now, probably the understatement of the year. I wondered what her hope was for me. Like any expectant mother, I'm sure what she learned or wanted most was just a healthy newborn with 10 fingers and toes and everything else in its proper place. But I wondered beyond that. I wondered what she hoped my life would be like. Again, all moms say, I just want you to be happy. But no, really, Mom, what did you envision I would grow up to do? America was a different place, especially for women back then. Women could aspire to higher education, but was the unspoken goal of going to college to find a husband? And if she didn't manage to snag Mr. Right, what sort of job opportunities was there for a woman after college? In 1964, a nurse, teacher, or secretary. Once you got past those choices, the pickings were no doubt pretty slim. The story my mom told of her and my dad looking at brand new apartments made it clear what society thought about a woman who was married and had an income. The rent for those new apartments, $90 a month, a lot of money back then, and if she would have had an income at the time, it would not have counted in the eyes of the apartment manager because, after all, when she had babies, she was just going to quit. Since the days of suffragettes, women have had to fight to be seen as equals. This has been a fight, you know. In addition to fighting for the right to vote, we have had to fight for equal opportunity, for scholarships, jobs, equal pay, the right not to have to endure sexual discrimination and unwanted molestation, and the validation of women's sports. There are so many women who have fought those fights. But now, all of that is slowly being erased. In fact, the very existence of women seems to just not be important anymore. Transgenderism is giving a very clear message to women. That message is, your presence is no longer needed. And in some cases, we are even doing it to ourselves. The ongoing debate over transgender women, aka men, competing against biological women in sports is the loudest cry of, quote, you don't matter. Those who support this are going to great lengths to insist that female athletes who have worked their entire lives to be the best they can be at their chosen sport, well, they're just transphobic if you object to transgenderism. Recently, an anthropology professor at the University of Pittsburgh attempted to tell a crowd of people, quote, that the skeletons of men and women are no different. The crowd laughed at him because we learn in common high school biology that there are many differences. The deception continued as an athlete's instructor at San Francisco State University recently claimed that there is, quote, no competitive difference between men and women. And if it seems that not even the Democrat Party is coming to the aid of women. You remember the Democrat Party, those champions of women's rights? Well, not anymore. Recently, the Biden administration announced that there would be changes to Title IX. It would prohibit the outright ban on transgender athletes at any school that receives federal funding. In a moment of wanting to appear magnanimous, the administration stated that there would be certain limitations allowed for fairness and safety. It was unclear what could possibly be an acceptable limitation when your opponent is a foot taller and outweighs you by about 100 pounds. This is also where we are doing to ourselves part comes in. A group of around 40 female athletes, some who will not surprise you, including women's team USA players Megan Rapinoe, Lori Lindsay, Becky Sauerbrunn, former pro basketball player Sue Bird, and Olympic hammer thrower Gwen Berry, what have they all got in common? They have all signed a letter opposing a bill being introduced in Congress that would protect women's sports and have also come out in support of transgender athletes. Is this some kind of weird Stockholm syndrome? In what world do you ensure your own defeat? These are famous women athletes supporting this. In the world of woke ideology that trumps logic, common sense, and biology, and virtue signaling is much more than training your whole life for something only to have it snatched away from you, apparently. Even the most basic of biological functions of women are being denied. It was Missouri Congresswoman Cori Bush who is most famous or infamous for using the term birthing people when trying to convince us that biological women were not the only ones to have babies. Again, shouldn't that same high school biology class have taught us that if a member of a certain species has a uterus, chances are it's a female? The latest insult to women as a whole has to be transgender activist and born a dude, Dylan Mulvaney. Mulvaney claims to be transitioning to a woman and is documenting the whole extravaganza on social media with his 365 days of girlhood. Mulvaney apparently thinks that all women remain somewhere between the ages of 8 and 16. He portrays girlhood and, by extension, women as shallow, stupid, and only caring about how they look and who notices. It is demeaning, and it really makes fun of what and who women are. It is completely dismissive of our grit and where we have come from to get where we are. Many of us are old enough to remember that old Virginia Slims cigarette ads from the height of the feminist movement in the 70s, whose tagline was, quote, "You've come a long way, baby," end quote. Well, we may have farther to go than we ever could have or would have imagined. Just an excellent article. Of course, I'm a little biased here, by my wife, Becky Noble, Gumshoe Politics. This is a Substack publication, The Erasing of Women in America. It's sad but true. It is very, very sad but true. And when we think about everything that's happening, we have to recognize that ultimately the battle belongs to the Lord. Here's Phil Wickham to end our broadcast. When I
can stand against the power of our God. You shine in the shadows.